This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Monday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, SiriusXM Channel 158. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin.
Heyo.
Un partido de números. For those listening in Spanish. How you doing, man?
I'm doing fantastic. Beautiful Monday here in Las Vegas. How was your weekend?
It's a beautiful Monday. The triple digits are in the rear view.
Yeah,
as of yesterday.
Did I see, like, I was like 83 driving in today.
Well, what I mean is the high is not going to get the triple digits anymore, I believe. I believe we've been guaranteed that.
Wait, really?
No. I mean, it's not guaranteed, but that's what the forecast says.
That would be nice.
I am very excited for today's show. Specifically, do you know why? MLB September most wins.
Mm-hmm.
A check of the calendar, and Kelly Bidlin did the checking for me. He just learned that August has 31 days in it.
That's right.
He learned that last week.
Still August today, everybody.
That means we get to take a crack at MLB September most wins after my worst performance of the year on the Detroit Tigers in August. It was the first team this year we didn't get to 500 with. Didn't get within four wins of the promised land. Obviously, didn't win it. We'll give it a crack for September. I've got my number three, my number two, and my number one. And let me just say this. If my number two hits, and the one that I came closest to playing but didn't, I am going to hate myself. Because I feel like I should almost play them, too.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Maybe I should.
You've never done that.
No.
But, like, there's no reason why you couldn't.
No reason why I couldn't. Except for by the time I do it, then people will knock it down, and then I can't get the price.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
We're gonna do it in a little bit. You got time. You got at least one commercial break,
you think I can go 3.5 minutes back and forth? Maybe I can make bet. They'll do the bet. I'll come back. Then I'll go a second time to collect bet.
I think we could figure it out.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe we'll do that. Again, conversations we should probably have off air. Greg Peterson will join us from the Baseball Betting Show and give his Fab Five Major League Baseball today. 4 weeks left in the MLB season. 4 weeks, because September, when we do September most wins, it's not a full month of baseball. It is 4 weeks. This is really an interesting sort of thing just from our fanhood perspective. The NFL season starts about as late as it ever has, right?
Mm-hmm.
Labor Day falling when it does. NFL season starting a week from Wednesday. We will only have 2.5 weeks of regular season baseball from that point forward, which is really a small amount because baseball sort of ends a little earlier.
Yeah.
Than normal. And then it's the playoffs.
I do enjoy that crossover.
I do. Well, October will be great, but I'm just saying it's less baseball overlap than in most years. So, which is not a bad thing. Just clears the way for football. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk to Greg about his plays today. 4 weeks left in the season, all the races coming down the stretch. Wes Reynolds talking golf. I know you have a lot to say about the way that Scottie Scheffler wrapped things up yesterday. NFL week one, we'll take a look at that. And Adam Burke a little later on. Talking all things baseball, everything he's betting on the heels of the NFL Betting Guide 2.0. We'll ask him about that as well. Coming up. First thing, though, you know, there's only one way to start here. Montreal Max tweeted yesterday, and he was like, is this your March Madness? He was like, is the U.S. Open tennis your March Madness? I was kind of like, yeah, it kind of is.
Mm-hmm.
The first couple days of the U.S. Open. Indian Wells is kind of my ACC tournament, the tournament that is closest to my heart. But this, it is March Madness. And last night, again, the biggest story sort of globally in sport, as they say across the pond, Novak Djokovic loses to Mariana Nivone in 5 sets in the first round of a major, breaking his 78 Grand Slam streak of winning first round matches, dating all the way back to 2006.
That's crazy.
In other words, a different lifetime, different generation since we've seen that happen. I think just by point of comparison, Roger Federer had 65 in a row. Novak, 78. I mean, he missed a couple along the way, most famously the one in Australia during COVID. But 78 in a row, he loses, and it really is a function of his body just has broken down entirely. We saw him in Cincinnati against Thiago Agustin Tirante. He lost to Tirante. He was vomiting right off court while the match was going on there. That we could have passed off to, oh, maybe it's the heat. We have no such excuse yesterday.
I didn't realize that happened in Cincinnati, too.
Oh, yeah. He vomited not once, but twice, I think, last night. They showed one.
Yeah, right.
If you're squeamish at home, don't look kind of thing. And he had been saying, you know, he has some sort of chronic thing happening. And I don't know. It just had Ali versus Trevor Burbick vibes last night. Mm-hmm. It had Sugar Ray Leonard versus Terry Norris vibes, to use sort of boxing references from back in the day when the greatness was extinguished. But I even asked on the podcast, on the U.S. Open preview pod that I did with Drew Dinsick and Zach Cohen, our own Zach Cohen, I said, is this Novak's last slam? And because it's not the most surprising thing in the world, because we kind of like, this is, look, he had that unbelievable win against Sinner in the semis in Australia, where Sinner was 2 of 18 on break points. Somehow he got to the finals, lost in the finals. Got knocked out in the third round of the French against João Fonseca. Got to the semis at Wimbledon, and now a first round exit. And it's just, it was tough to watch last night. Novak was crying on the court in the fifth set, because I think Zach, via text last night, said it best. You got the feeling that was the first moment where Novak Djokovic finally entertained retirement.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it finally hit him in that moment, and all that came rushing in at that moment. Because physically just unable to go.
Yeah, I felt the same way. Is it the beginning of the end, or is it the possible end?
I think it's the end of the end. I know a lot of people now who are like not tennis hardos are like, oh, what do you think? Where do you think his best shot? His best shot was here.
Right, exactly.
Or at Wimbledon two slams ago. Like, he hasn't won a slam since 2023.
And these guys, for the most part, most of these great athletes do not like to go out by playing bad at their sport for a period of time before they finally retire.
Right. I mean, it happens at every... I mean, even Michael Jordan, who went out on top, then came back.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I just mentioned a couple boxers. But the boxing is littered with those kinds of guys, right? And tennis is the same way, right? Like, no one wants to go out on anything but their own terms. But father, what's the expression? Father time is undefeated?
Undefeated, yeah.
I just hope he's okay. I hope whatever's chronically bothering him is not anything more serious. It is amazing, because even during the match last night, I mean, he's capitulating the whole time. He's like barely trying. He's still winning points,
I know,
against professional tennis players.
So from a betting perspective, I watched most of it. I mean, from the beginning, watched him. Was like, okay, by the time we got to the second set, it's very obvious. This is not, you know, something's up, but not the same Novak Djokovic. I still didn't have the stones to go run a live bet against
him. We saw it at the end of the first set. And then some people did get in on it, like Felica got in on it.
Good on him.
But even that was kind of like, Novak still went up two sets to one and then up a break in the fourth. So it's not like it didn't turn out to be the correct handicap for at least a couple more sets. Because at two sets up two sets to one and up a break in the fourth, you're like, oh, he's doing it again.
Mm-hmm.
But it was not to be. And so tough to watch, just from a, forget the betting standpoint. For the betting standpoint, helps us greatly for those of us who had the, by the way, I lost one future yesterday. Barbora Krejcikova bounced out of the first round on the ladies' side.
That
was the longest shot of the quarters. That goes out. But it helps us greatly from a betting standpoint, not to be callous about it, but that's what we're here for. For those who tailed on the Daniil Medvedev 7-1 to win the Novak Djokovic quarter, we picked the right quarter, right? That was the whole point, was that Novak seemed vulnerable anyway. Didn't think he'd go out in the first round, but seemed vulnerable anyway. So Medvedev, our 7-1, very much alive. And a lot of people, I know Zach and Chris have Nakashima at 7-1 as well. Some people might have Big Foe. By data, by hardcore data, year-long data, Daniil Medvedev's the guy to beat. By six-month data, Nakashima's the guy to beat. So pick your poison there. Nakashima having a really good summer. So Krejcikova's gone, 14-1. She's out in a blink. But everybody else here, just one day in, obviously, still going. Medvedev wins his first-round match in straights against Hugo Gaston. As far as the individual matches yesterday, oh, boy. I had six plays, four completed, two are carryover to today. I went 1-3. Would you like to hear about two of the losses?
Sure.
One of them, we were 2 points away from winning, Renata Sarasua. She lost. And if that wasn't enough for you as enough grotesqueness in the morning, that's a word. Then I had a young lady by the name of Hannah Vandewinkel. She was taking on Carolina Pliskova. She was up 6-2, 5-2 with a match point. Guess what happened?
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Yep. Today,
I got some insight.
I'm so numb to this at this point that it's just like, but that one was brutal.
Yeah, that was
6-2, 5-2 with a match point. Lose.
I didn't realize it was like that when Drew texted the wrong group.
By the way, I meant to send it to Drew and Zach. By accident, I sent it to a Drew Kelly one. Kelly comes back with, hey, that's too bad, but watch Drew talk about s'mores. And he sends me a video of
like, I didn't know what was going on. And I'm like, I didn't know you had L's.
I'm like, too soon, Kelly, too soon.
Anyway. I don't know what you guys are talking about. I'm sorry.
Today, four plays. Obviously, two carries over from yesterday. Today, four plays. They're all dogs. Here are the outrights that are, you know, still going. Obviously, the tournament's barely started. Iga is in action today. Gaffer to win the women's side, 7-1. Carlitos to win the men's side, +175. Anissa Mova to win quarter number three on the ladies' side. Daniil Medvedev to win quarter number three on the men's side at 7-1. 4-1 on Anissa Mova. Krejcikova is already a loser. Four plays today in tennis. Two on the men's side, two on the ladies' side. They are all underdogs. James Duckworth, the Australian, is the first play on the men's side. Duckworth is a, let me get the exact number here
plus
for you.
+140.
Thank you. He's a +140 dog against Matteo Rinaldi. Also on the men's side, Harry Wendelken, +247 versus Luciano Darderi. That's a big, big dog. And on the ladies' side, Daria Snigur, +240 versus Diana Schneider, and Elisabetta Cocciaretto, just like saying that, +160 versus Katerina Siniakova. So two on the men's side, two on the ladies' side, all big underdogs today as the numbers come back to the dog side. That was an interesting week of favorites coming up.
Yeah, a lot
up.
Of favorites from you. Yeah.
Very odd. Very odd. Golf over the weekend as well. We got thoughts next. You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. VSiN Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with VSiN Pro.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on a numbers game, live from Circa Resort Casino, downtown Las Vegas. A couple things. Lionel Messi. Lionel Messi, by the way, named after Lionel Richie of the Commodores. Do you know that?
No, I had no idea.
It's true. Yeah, they actually met finally.
Really?
Yeah. Lionel Messi has just announced his retirement from the Argentinian national team.
Okay. And he just, did he score like four goals in a game like on Friday or Saturday or something?
He did. I missed it.
Yeah, he did.
It was handicap and tennis.
It might have been longer ago than that. But.
There's that. By the way, and to the person who asked the question, and I want to give him credit for this question once again. This is from the person who asked the question. It was GV, New Jersey, New York, asked, hey, in the monthly MLB wins thing, has everybody before this season always made the playoffs? And I pointed out that the first 3 months of this year, we could have three teams that will miss the playoffs, Reds, Mariners, Marlins. Mariners will have something to say about this here down the stretch. It's the second straight year where our March, April, May, and June teams didn't make the playoffs because last year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, last year, the first 3 months of 2025, it was the Mets, Cardinals, and Astros. None of them made the playoffs. And then the next three teams did, which appears that it could be the case this year as well after the Red Sox and Phillies have won the last 2 months. So anyway, there's the answer to that question.
Saturday.
Yes, sir.
How could you miss the inner Miami CF Montreal game? How could you miss that on? I think you had better things to do on a Saturday. How dare you?
So, sorry.
Inter Miami wins 7-1. Four of those by Lionel Messi.
Named after the great Lionel Richie of the Commodores. You know who knows something about Lionel Richie of the Commodores? This guy, Wes Reynolds, who was not named after Wes Unseld of the Washington Bullets. He is part of the glue that holds this whole operation together. You can follow him on Twitter at WesReynolds1. That's the number one. Wes joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Good morning, sir.
Four goals in one game, Gil. Easy like Sunday morning, right?
That's right. Except it was a Saturday. Yes?
It was a Saturday.
Yeah.
That was close.
Yeah. If it was an Earth, Wind, and Fire song, we could make the Saturday claim. But then I don't think the Commodores have anything with Saturday in the title. Wes, did you have Scottie Scheffler this weekend?
I did not. I did bet the without, so I got that half right, but I didn't get the guy in second right. Unfortunately, like like the previous couple weeks. But Scotty, I think, he probably, and we're going to do, by the way, Kelly, Matt and I, an award show kind of on give our longies or whatever we're going to call them, the long shots awards. And I'm sure Scotty Scheffler is going to be in very high consideration for player of the year with his performance late in the playoffs.
You got to win it at this point, right? There's no controversy here, is there?
I wouldn't think so.
Yeah.
I know majors get valued, and all the players kind of have that mentality, right? You know, how do you do in the majors? How do you do in the big four events? And he didn't win one this year, but he was in contention and I think about three out of the four of them. And, you know, it's not like he won, you know, little events, maybe the American Express, even though that was a very good field, but you win two playoff events and you have that many top fives and you have that many top tens. I think consistency throughout the season also matters because you had a lot of guys earlier in the year that won big tournaments and they kind of faded away at the end of the season, maybe ran out of gas a little bit, and he kept playing consistently throughout the calendar year.
Who's going to win the Arnold Palmer Award for the Rookie of the Year?
I think it's down to two, because Rookie of the Year is kind of funny, you know, a weird thing with some guys start late. Like some guys, if they start right out of college, where their college season goes until like April and May, like Jackson Koivin, the kid out of Auburn that was on the national championship team, he won a tournament in late July, but he hadn't been on the tour but for like several weeks. So I think if you're looking full season, it might be Chris Reitan, the Norwegian who won the Truest, or Alex Fitzpatrick, the younger brother of Matthew Fitzpatrick. Those seem like kind of the top two to me, but these guys all start at different points now. So like you could be a DP World Tour player and be an old grizzled veteran. And if you get in the top 10 on their Race to Dubai, you get a PGA Tour card. So you can be like a rookie now, like 35 or 40 years old, even though these guys are pretty young in their early 20s. But I think it's going to come down to the two Europeans, Wrighton or Fitzpatrick.
Back to Scott. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, this is what, remember we talked about it. I know you bet Penge, and that was
Bet Penge.
Penge is going to be great.
Yeah.
But we talked about it then. I'm like, this whole conversation right there is why like this award has not picked up more steam as far as a conversation just over the years, because you got these guys coming in and out. You don't really know who's a rookie, when they're a rookie. Like the fact that Koivin's not even going to be in the conversation, Wes, seems a little silly. But yeah, it's probably down to those two.
Let's go back to Scotty Scheffler for a second. This is from Kyle Porter, so I don't know if you caught this. Scotty Scheffler yesterday set the all-time record, past Tiger Woods, for the most money earned in the history of the PGA Tour. And Kyle Porter breaks it down. By the way, it's 130 plus million now. Tiger was at 120, a mere 120 plus.
Thanks, Liv.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Liv helped, right? Scotty Scheffler, though, first 70 PGA Tour events per Kyle Porter. Zero wins, 11 top fives. He made $9 million officially. His first 70 PGA Tour events. 70 events, $9 million. His next 100, 22 wins. He won 22 out of the next 100. I don't know if you know that, Kelly, but that's more than 20%. That's 22%.
That's pretty good.
58 top fives. Good God. And $121 million officially earned. I think someone else broke it down yesterday that of his $130 million, $78 million of it's the last 2 years. Last 28 months, exactly. 28 months, pardon me.
Now, that would make sense because it's even, I know we've got Justin Ray, too, since the beginning of the 2022 season. Wins on the PGA Tour, 22 for Scotty Scheffler. So he's had 22 since the beginning of the 2022 season. Man, that's a lot of 22s. Scotty Scheffler with 22, Rory with 11, Goddard, Shoffley, and Wyndham Clark with 6 wins since the beginning of 2022.
So, Wes, I'm you know, we get into this little sports talk, radio talk every once in a while, especially this time of year. Give me Scotty Scheffler in the all-time golf pantheon pecking order at this point.
He probably, I would say, maybe back end of the top 10, or certainly approaching that. It's so early in his career. Like, you think he's going to be there, barring that he stays injury-free, of course. But, you know, obviously the top is Tiger and Jack and Ben Hogan, Arnold Palmer, Gary Player, Tom Watson. Rory, I think, is actually in the all-time top 10. So, and then you go back to the older guys like Gene Sarazen and Walter Hagen. But I think Scotty is on his way. to getting in that top 10. You know, once he finishes off that career Grand Slam, because that's kind of what Rory did like last year, right, at the Masters, where it's kind of like, you know what, he's probably a top 10 player of all time. He's certainly the greatest, arguably the greatest European player ever now with what he has done. So I think that's where you're going to see Scotty. But where you're throwing those money or that those dollar figures around, man, those are like chump change. I mean, these guys were like persecuted. They had to create a whole new tour because they weren't making enough money funded by a certain government over there in the Middle East. So but I think that tour might be ending very soon.
I feel like also when I ask that question, just as it's coming out of my mouth, it's an unfair question because
that's,
I think,
very unfair.
You know, well, specifically with golf, I think it is.
Yeah.
Because in golf, I think you tend to romanticize the ancient players more than in any other sport. Mm-hmm. Like tennis, people don't go around being like, oh, that Margaret Court, that Ken Rosewall. Like, you can't beat those guys. But in golf, if you say Ben Hogan or Gene Sarazen, who am I forgetting, or Bobby Jones or something, you know, something like that. Like, you're reticent to ever say that someone was as good as those guys, right? Not to mention Jack and Tiger, who we saw.
So for me, this is an impossible conversation because of two things. And one of them fair, one of them unfair. Equipment and how it has changed and evolved over time. We don't know what Nicklaus could be like if he was using today's equipment, right?
True.
Now, the other one,
wise in tennis,
the other one where I'm not going to give any excuse to the older players, the fact that, like, Tiger Woods had to come around and revolutionize how these guys get in shape and exercise. Like, I'm not going to hold it against Scottie Scheffler that nobody cared about exercising on the PGA Tour in the 1980s. Like, they all could have done that. Everybody does it on the tour now. They go crazy.
Yeah. Who was Tiger's, was it Mark McNamara? What was the guy's name? Who was his buddy? Who won a couple?
Mark O'Meara.
Mark McNamara. Mark O'Meara won two majors, right? Mark O'Meara tells the story about Tiger where, like, they went and they played a round of golf together, and Tiger shot a 59, mm-hmm. right? And the next day they went out, and Tiger, the first hole, it was a par three on the first hole, wherever they went to play, and he had a hole in one. And Mark O'Meara walked off the course, got in his car, and drove home. He's like, I'm not doing this anymore. This is in, can you imagine 59 in the first hole the next day?
Yeah.
You're like, this is it. That's it. But you're right. It was just something so, and Scotty wasn't that. Now, to the point of, did Tiger, it's always interesting when people say, oh, Tiger didn't have as broad of a field of players to play against. Yeah, because he was so dominant. How do you know?
Yeah.
Because
he was beating up on a bunch of out of shape dudes.
But then Scotty had Liv, right?
Yeah.
So there's that. Anyway, Wes, sorry.
But I miss the charm of the old days, though.
Me too.
You know, when those famous picture where Arnold Palmer's just got a cigarette in his mouth and he's taking an approach to the 18th. It's like, I miss that. I miss guys, you know, getting hungover and pitching no hitters in baseball, you know?
Yeah.
So there's a certain charm of that before sports science evolved.
I do agree with that. Wes has some college football thoughts, maybe some plays. That's next. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
I just have to add to the water rankings that I gave my rankings, right? Evian 1, I don't even know the name, Aquapana 2.
I don't know it either.
Fiji 3, and Darnell Glenn, who has been our, a numbers game employee of the month, a record 47 times. You know what he says? He thinks Arrowhead is the best water. I think that is grounds for just dismissal.
I think he was joking, but I'm not sure.
He was not joking.
I'm pretty sure.
Was
like
he joking?
10 years ago, I pulled up a like some breakdown study on bottled water, and Arrowhead was like one of the bottom ones as far as like cleanliness and stuff.
Chris Foster said it best. Chris Foster said... Deep thoughts with Chris Foster said...
He did.
Arrowhead is like someone else drank the water first and then you drink it.
It's like a full bottle of backwash.
Oh, my God. Adam Burke joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. He is the managing editor at VSiN.com. He is part of the glue, maybe the whole glue. Not the whole glue, but he's most of the glue that holds this whole operation together. He joins us now. You can follow him on Twitter, of course, at Skating Tripods. Good morning, Adam.
Hey, how's it going, boys?
Doing very well. Would your Guardians just go away, please? Just go away. I'm just so annoying. They lose a
bunch.
They're
trying.
Yeah, they did this last year, too. You lost a bunch in a row, and you're like, oh, they're going to go away. No, then they come roaring back. Okay, you have a trio of baseball plays for us today, none that do involve the Guardians. What do you have?
Yeah, Guardians don't play today, so that's good. I'll actually be able to enjoy my evening, so that'll be nice. So I'm going to take a big shot here with the Giants and the Braves. I'm going to take a shot on the Giants in this one at a big underdog price. Anthony Molina gets the start here. He was a guy who was a farmhand for the Braves, came over to the Giants in the Tyler Mahle trade. So we'll see how he does in this one. I'm mostly looking just to fade Bryce Elder. You know, his FIP in the second half, very, very high, 484. I'm not a big Bryce Elder guy. And look, this is a really, really strange situation for both of these teams. This is a makeup game from June 18th. So both of them are losing an off day, but the Giants played a doubleheader against the Diamondbacks on Saturday. So they had Sunday off to travel. Whereas the Braves had to play yesterday, finish off their sweep in extra innings against the Rockies. So if I'm the Braves, I'm leading my division. I'm kind of pissed off to be losing an off day here. Got to travel to DC and take on the Nationals coming up here during the week, and then play a wraparound four gamer against the Phillies. Pretty big series next weekend for them. Just swept the Dodgers at home. Like, I don't know. Maybe this is just a really, really flat spot here for Atlanta. Whereas the Giants, I mean, they're not a good team. Obviously their record shows that, but maybe the competitive juices get flowing when you play some of the better teams that are in the league, you know, especially a division leader like the Braves. So I think the Giants are worth it here today. I'm not going to say this is a punt for the Braves, but I don't think they're going to be super invested in this one. And Elder is a guy that I want to fade anyway. I don't want to lay a big price with him. So Giants in that plus 175 range, I think, is worth a shot here. And I did think about plus 1.5 in the minus 130 range as an alternate way of playing this one. But I figured I'll just go ahead and hope that the Giants show up today.
Come on, Giants. Get them a big score. I love that whole handicap. It was sort of like a sheepish thing. I was like, I don't know. Maybe the Braves will have a letdown spot. Maybe the Giants will show up for it. That's how you got to do it with these Giants. I'm with you. Plus 174 on the San Francisco Giants at Truist Park in Atlanta tonight. You have a couple more for us.
Yeah, AL Central matchup here, Twins and Tigers. This is a price play for me, taking the Tigers at a plus money price. Jackson Jobe on the mound, Taj Bradley going for the Twins. I just don't really see a scenario where this game is that much more than a coin flippy type of line here. And in some respects, I kind of even like the Tigers a little bit because Jobe's had one bad start, gave up 6 runs to the White Sox. Other than that, he's been good, induced a ton of weak contact, been very, very effective. Taj Bradley is really good too, but you know, second half here, 484 ERA. You know, he's still missing a lot of bats, but he's walking more guys, giving up some more home runs. A guy that maybe getting a little bit tired, maybe kind of fatiguing a little bit here this late into the season with, you know, kind of an elevated workload, a guy who was hurt, you know, fairly often down there with the Rays and everything. Jackson Jobe is pretty strong, you know, coming back from injury, made some rehab starts. He's made 4 starts at the MLB level, probably just a little bit more in the gas tank for him at this point in time. And Tigers bullpen better by ERA, better by expected ERA in the month of August. So just a price play here, a price grab for me on the Tigers, you know, getting that plus 105, plus 110 type of price range on them against the Twins here today.
If the Tigers are going to make this interesting, it's got to start now. There's no time to waste. I mean, this is third best run differential in the American League, nowhere close to a playoff position right now. 5.5 back out of the third wild card position. How about this? This is a battle of two division leaders. The White Sox with a 3.5 game lead over your Guardians in the AL Central. The Houston Astros now with a 2-game lead over the Rangers and a 5-game lead over the Mariners in the AL West. The Astros trying to get above 500 in the end. They're 69-68 right now, trying to avoid being a division winner with a losing record. So far, so good, but it's dicey. What do you got?
Yeah, it is dicey, although I do think that they put one in the win column here tonight. Easy to say this is my favorite play of the night because it is the only minus money play in the minus 125, minus 130 range here for this one. But Peter Lambert has reverse platoon splits. Righties have hit him well, lefties have not. Lefties only batting 179 this season against Lambert, 262 slugging percentage. And the guys who are really dangerous in this White Sox lineup are left-handed bats. So I think that Lambert's in a decent spot here tonight to neutralize what is a pretty good lineup, especially because he's held lefties in check so much from a power standpoint. Whereas for Anthony Kay, strikeout percentage under 15% against right-handed batters, 9% walk rate, 16 of the 18 home runs that he's allowed. They've got a 478 slugging percentage against him, 374 on base percentage. This is a bad, bad matchup for him. You know, the Astros are a very right-handed heavy lineup. Probably have seven righties at least in the lineup here for tonight against K. Just not a good spot for him. Little bit worried about the Astros bullpen. Pretty heavy workload over the last few days. Josh Hader's pitched 3 of 4 and 4 of 6. He may not be available tonight. But the Astros bullpen's been pretty solid throughout the course of the season here. So I'll trust that they'll figure this thing out late if they need to. But based on the platoon splits here, really, really big starting pitching advantage for Houston. So I laid this number down there at, what is it, Daikin Park, whatever we call it now, because I loved when it was the Juice Box, when it was Minute Maid.
Yeah.
But I like Houston at home here in this one.
I love the Juice Box. Last thing on baseball. 4 weeks left in the regular season. 4 weeks from now, who is the team that right now is on the outside looking in that will make the playoffs? Who's the team on the inside looking out, perhaps, that won't, either AL or NL? Or will it just be status quo and nothing will really change?
Always putting me on the spot with these things.
I'm so sorry,
No, it's fine. The obvious answer here is that Cleveland falls out, right? I mean, you know, I could totally see Baltimore sneaking in. Toronto is just all of a sudden kind of hanging around a little bit, just a game out and then the AL wild card. You know, Scherzer turning back the clock like a decade, throwing the 10 strikeout game over the weekend. I don't know. The Blue Jays strike me as a team that
they're getting in.
They're just going to find a way to get in, I think.
Yeah, I think they're getting in. Blue Jays' schedule is easy. I think there's some karma, right? Losing game 7 last year, they deserve to be in, for God's sakes. Let's go.
Yeah, I think so. And yeah. Cleveland, I mean, again, I just – they got to be carried right now by Parker Messick. And at some point, this kid's going to hit a wall. I think he just has to.
Okay, college football. How'd you do week 0? Did you make any bets?
Yeah, week 0. I mean, I had New Mexico State against Florida State. And there were early returns on Florida State, not particularly strong. A lot of people out there seem very upset with the performance that the Seminoles had, so that was nice. I had the under in the Jacksonville State North Dakota State game. Did not expect that final to be as lopsided as it was. Really concerning performance from Jacksonville State offensively. I took Sacramento State against Eastern Michigan, just thinking, you know, Eastern Michigan is not a team that I like very much this season. That one didn't work out. Sacramento State's talent level, particularly in the trenches, is just not FBS caliber. And Eastern Michigan's a team that I don't think is very good. So that was a really bad sign for Sacramento State going forward. Like many, I laid the TCU price. Jaden Craig looked really bad.
Oh, he looked so bad.
He did not look good at all.
Yeah, I agree.
And I mean, look, credit to North Carolina. I mean, they were really good defensively last year, and nobody talked about it because the offense was so bad. They come out and put forth a really good defensive effort without their DC, Steve Belichick, in that one. So found out a lot, had kind of a break-even-ish type of week. But, you know, this is a big week here where you got a very high variance environment with 43 FBS versus FBS games. A good opportunity for us to, you know, see what most of these teams are about here this week.
I mean, I'm with you, though, but besides North Carolina getting the W, which I acknowledge they got it, good for them, I don't know if we can say the defense is good because Craig missed about three passes that were going to be huge gainers, and it was just like, where are you? And part of it was maybe the ball was wet, but it certainly affected him more than the other side of the field was affected. Week one, what have you made so far bet-wise, or what are you looking to make? College football.
I haven't bet anything yet. I mean, these lines have been up for a very, very long time. So, you know, now I'm kind of curious to see where the market goes as betting limits are much bigger at all the shops that are out there. You've got people taking much stronger positions now. Just kind of waiting to see how things sort of play out a little bit here, you know, before I dive in. I mean, I have my numbers. Most of them are very close to the market, which is, you know, kind of what you want early on in the season here. But I do like Stanford right now, getting 24.5 against Miami. I was impressed with Davis Warren. I think Miami might have a little bit of growing pains with all the roster turnover.
Ooh, I like that answer.
I like it, too.
Okay. Adam, appreciate it. Football's here. NFL, a week, 9 days away. Can't wait. Thank you so much, Adam.
Take care, guys.
Maybe some tennis head-to-heads. Well, at least we found one head-to-head.
We got one!
Next on a numbers game.
A
Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Football is back. VSiN Pro gives you everything you need to bet smarter this season. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Get instant access to our updated NFL betting guide featuring post-preseason updates, week one betting systems, contest strategies, and fresh best bets from VSiN's experts. You also receive our college football betting guide with previews of all 138 FBS teams, power ratings, proven betting systems, and best bets from VSiN's sharpest minds. Your VSiN Pro subscription also includes daily best bets, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, AI-powered prop tools, 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app. Get started for just $9.99 or save 50% with a VSiN Pro annual subscription. Sign up now at VSiN.com/subscribe. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. We get tweets made of the book. This is from PK Mountain Steeler Den. I like to scroll watching sports. If I'm watching something, even Red Zone or whatever, I'm focused on watching that, not my phone, and therefore like to scroll to see updates. Don't know if I'm right, but were there no news slash sports scrolls at all until 9/11? Well, that was all over the place.
No, it came earlier than that, right? But it's later than you think. But beginning part of that, ding, 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 that's what I'm talking about. Like, if you can give me the scores on the bottom so I don't have to go to my phone, I liked that.
Do you remember a time? You might be too young for this. There was a time. For a large part of our lives of people my age,
yeah,
where they didn't show that they don't have a score bot on the screen during games. You're like, what was the score again?
No, that's another one that you can't believe how much later that started.
Oh my God, that was like not till the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Listener Lance, listener Lance is rolling right now. He's got Pete Crow Armstrong 200-1 most home runs.
Man.
PCA now two homers behind. Kyle Schwarber. Schwarber has 40. Pete Crow Armstrong, after a 5-home-run outburst this weekend, has 38. PCA, he also has MVP, 40-1. You're winning that one, Lance. You're winning that. Both preseason bets, I'd like to say I'm a highly skilled futures bettor, but I am just a Cubs fan. PCA, 2 back of the home run lead. Let's go.
Real ESPN with the bottom line since 1995.
Real Knicks, is it possible to already be done with college football? Now, I know why it's called week zero. That was a prediction for the number of wins I would have Saturday. Oh, well, I'm off to donate blood to make back some of my losses. And Brendan, talking about the tennis coverage on ESPN, he says NASCAR does that too. Goes away from the action for some simulation or something lame. Wes Reynolds, kind enough to join us for a second segment. Wes, before we get to your college football, you said you wanted to say something about Novak last night. Were you watching?
Yeah, I was watching the end, and you know, he was just, you know, you could tell, like, he was getting kind of a tear in his eye because it's like he knew it was over last night. And you know, just to see him, and obviously for the kid from Argentina, I forget his name,
Navone,
like, that's the biggest win of his career. I know he won like some 250 event on clay earlier this season, but that's the biggest win of his life. And it's like nobody outside of his box is rooting for him. But this is, I get to win on court at Ash Stadium against the greatest of all time. And, you know, so I felt sorry for him, but then for Djokovic. And I think the reality just set in. And I thought, you know, Novak was still classy to sign for the kids that waited and stayed late for the match at Ash Stadium. And, you know, I hope it's not the end, but I hope it is the end because I think he should go out like on his terms. You know, he has that right to do that and he has earned that right. But it was, you know, that I don't know if it was an injury or maybe it's just father time being undefeated, but that was sad. And then to follow it up with Venus Williams, who had like several set points in, and I'm like, I thought she retired like 10 years ago. So I don't know. That was a little bit of a sloppy late night match.
I don't know what the Venus thing is all about. I know she said it's for health insurance and she acted like she wasn't joking, but I don't know what that's about. Again, she turned pro in 1994. And then the Djokovic thing, just to follow up on what I said earlier, it did feel like a boxer in that fight beyond his prime, right? Who knew, you know, it's like the look in their eyes is Ali against Berbick, it's Sugar Ray Leonard against Terry Norris. That's what it felt like last night. And I hope it's, you know, first and foremost, I hope this chronic illness that he is talking about, I hope he's okay, because there's certainly something going on with him beyond heat. This was, you could have made that excuse in Cincinnati, but this was not temperature related last night at Ash. So I just hope he's okay. And yeah, I mean, he hasn't won a slam since 2023. And for those of us who have watched tennis closely, it's not going to happen anymore. This was the shot. And so it's over. And Zach said it best. Zach Cohen said it best when he was crying. It was kind of, and I think Zach is right. That was the moment where it felt like it finally hit Novak for the first time that it was over. Now, maybe he was just...
The reality hit him, absolutely. Yeah,
maybe he was in pain physically, too. I'm not denying that. But it felt like that was the moment. And it's tough to watch, yeah, whether you're a fan of his or not, anyone from greatness fall from grace like that in such a public way. 24 slams, greatest of all time, though, by that measure. Part of the big three with Federer and Nadal. We will always have that golden age. College football, Wes, how'd you do this past weekend? You make any bets?
I did okay, actually, for week zero. Usually it's you're kind of trying to survive because we're all jonesing, right?
Yes.
We're all, you know, to get back into it. And, you know, ended up surviving and, you know, being on the right side of a couple of the ones that had some chicanery, like the Hawaii-Stanford late. Now I took the conservative route and laid money line and thinking I was smart. But then Hawaii has the football and they're already inside the number. So I'm like, what an idiot I was. And then, of course, they get the fumble return for a touchdown. So I did see one thing, though. It's like, oh, man, Stanford got in the back door. It's actually not the back door. It's the front door when the favorite gets ahead of the number late. And then it's the back door when the underdog gets with inside the number. So it was kind of one of those weird things where I guess people were calling it a bad beat. There's, I think, a line of demarcation between bad beat and tough beat. It was a tough beat if you had Hawaii. But it wasn't a bad beat because Stanford was the right side and probably the deserved side if you really go inside the stats and look at yards per play and all that stuff. And the fact that Hawaii did nothing like the first three quarters on offense, I think they had 7 points. And then all of a sudden Stanford decides to kind of crap the bed a little bit and make this a lot tighter than it needed to be.
Technical term. I agree with that. Yeah, probably not a bad beat. You're right. Just a tough one. What about week one? What are you looking at?
A couple I played. I'm still looking at the card, obviously. And man, you used to have that graphic up, all these big games. Like, you usually get one or two in week one, and you've got so many featured matchups. A couple I played, this is a Friday night game. I laid the 10 with Michigan State against Toledo, and I don't think Michigan State is going to be great this year. Pat Fitzgerald, by the way, is back in the Big Ten. Mm-hmm. Lawsuit now settled officially with his alma mater at Northwestern, so he takes over in East Lansing. And I don't think that they're going to be that good this year, but I think they're finally playing the right quarterback, Alessio Mihaljevic, if I'm pronouncing that name right. He was the backdoor man last year. Like, he got me in the back door like three times when they put him on a mop-up duty. Because now Aiden Childs, by the way, is the starting quarterback at Fitzgerald's alma mater, Northwestern. But they're playing Toledo. Toledo, new regime there because Jason Candle went and took the UConn job. So I know the MAC against the Big Ten, like the MAC teams kind of always get up for the Big Ten, right? Because a lot of those kids want to play at Big Ten schools. But I think Michigan State is the right way to go. Even though I don't think they're going to win a lot of games this year, I think they get the Fitzgerald era off to a right start, at least, to go 1-0 against the Rockets.
Spartans favored by 10. That's a Friday night game this week. Week number one, remember, extends all the way through Monday night with the NFL not playing. What else piques your curiosity amongst the bigger games, perhaps?
I'm interested, I think, in the Wisconsin-Notre Dame on Sunday. Because now Notre Dame, like, it's kind of like, okay, they're going to be in the national championship, right? They got left out of the playoff and now they're here and they're playing Wisconsin at Lambeau Field, by the way. So this is a neutral site game. Wisconsin, this is kind of the make or break year for Luke Fickell there. They've been a real disappointment. Like, you thought they got him at Wisconsin, they're going to start to win big and they've gone nowhere but backwards. Should be an improved team this year. They have Colton Joseph, the transfer quarterback from Old Dominion. So I think the offense should be better. Like, they were like dead last in offense and amongst the Power Four teams in FBS and pretty much almost every category. So I think their offense is going to be a little bit better. I kind of lean Wisconsin inside the number because I think Notre Dame, that's probably going to get to 21 because, you know, Notre Dame's that mission team that, you know, is wanting to make up for last season. So you might wait on some of these. And the steam, if you looked at week zero, a lot of the early moves, i.e. TCU and North Carolina, wait on those numbers. If you see a number moving early in the week, it may come back. like on Friday or Saturday, kind of like that USC number got two out of whack against San Jose State. And then San Jose State gets popped and they hang within the number the whole game. So wait on that. You may get more than 21 here if you're looking to take Wisconsin.
Yeah. Well, we used to have Dr. Bob on. He'd move it and then sometimes it would come back. I asked this of, maybe you just answered it with Notre Dame, but I asked this of Kelly earlier. Of all the big favorites, I usually ask this on the Megapod for the NFL, and I say, who's the most likely to lose outright? I won't say it in college football, but who's the most likely to have to play a competitive game into the fourth quarter of all the big favorites this weekend?
They're not a big favorite, but of those high-profile games you had listed, I think Ole Miss is going to get all they want from Louisville on Sunday night.
We accept the answer. Thank you, Wes. Appreciate it as always.
You bet, guys. Thank you.
Wes Reynolds, everybody. At Wes Reynolds 1. That's the number one. Adam Burke will join us. We'll talk some NFL on the other side. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.